This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at @itswilltime and at @BarnettJake. On today's show, CM Punk's pipe bomb promo 5 years later. So Jake, an interesting anniversary, I should say, happened last Monday, and we're talking about it today on Monday, July 4th. We're talking about it on, Friday, July 1st, but no one needs to know that. The five-year anniversary of the infamous CM Punk pipe bomb promo came and went, and WWE obviously didn't make a big deal of it because CM Punk is on TV saying that they make their talent into indentured servants. But that promo was obviously a big thing, and I find the anniversary of it to be kind of fascinating. People thought it was an era-defining moment. I know a lot of people owe their modern wrestling fandom to that moment. They kind of got back into it because they thought major change was coming because of it. And I think it's interesting to look back on the legacy of that 5 years later. So first, I want to ask, what was your experience watching that promo?
I remember it vividly. I thought it was fascinating at the time because I think it was one of the few moments where, you know, the actual worked shoot phenomenon sort of clicked with people. Like, it had been a while since they had done it really well, and Punk just kind of went out there and you know, did something that few people can do, you know, with their verbal skills, which is basically, you know, capture an audience and hold their attention for an extended period of time without some obnoxious chants breaking out and you know, ruining the moment and things like that. And so I remember it, you know, just being an extremely successful moment for him and a career defining moment for him. But I, at the time, you know, we hoped that it would bring change, you know, to the show and to the brand and bring a little bit more self-awareness to the product and things of that nature. But I don't think, you know, there was a ton of optimism about it, and I'll probably have to go back in the archives and look up, you know, what I said about it at the time, which is probably completely different than what I'm saying now, knowing me. But, you know, I, you know, looking back on it from today, I don't think it was as big as it would have been had, the last 5 years taking place in between. You know, it just sort of put a damper on how legacy defining that moment is, because it's going to be essentially written out of history at some point.
Written out of history, or Punk will have his glorious reunion with WWE where they'll decide to make some money together and it'll get written back in. I was at the Raw where he delivered that promo. It was in Las Vegas, and it was during the summer that I was interning in Las Vegas. So I was living in Las Vegas alone in a small, like, outside the actual house. It was a very depressing summer, but I remember going to that Raw, and it was actually kind of funny because they taped two Raws in one night because they had an overseas tour that stopped them from being able to tape a show on July 4th. So they did the Raw with CM Punk getting suspended, and then they did the follow-up to Raw to it right in front of us that night, which was kind of interesting. But I remember watching the show, and I wasn't on Twitter a ton during the actual episode. Like, I was watching it. I was just watching in the arena, and I remember hearing, like, hearing this promo and going, oh, it's a little meta, but it's a pretty good heel promo. Like, he's still mad at the fans. He's talking bad about the company, but mainly it's saying bad things about John Cena, which is heelish, is saying, like, kind of rude things about fans and about how they don't support him. But yeah, but there were these nuggets of truth and these moments in it where he did break the fourth wall in a way that I think excited people. And then I remember going on Twitter between episodes. Like, I was sneaking down to a different seat because a bunch of people had left before the second episode was taped. So between Raw episodes, I'm sneaking down and I open my phone, look at Twitter. And I was amazed at the massive reaction this thing was getting. People were so excited about it. I was kind of dumbfounded by what it did. And then in the couple of days after, I looked and was like, okay, I think I kind of get the impact this is having now. I get why people are so excited, because they didn't see it as standard heel promo. They saw it as kind of a game changer.
Yeah, and I'm not sure, you know, in hindsight, that it was that much of a game changer. I mean,
I don't think so.
It didn't lead to, you know, this massive sea change in the way WWE did business. If anything, it led to, you know, CM Punk establishing himself as, you know, a major player in the company and somebody that they could count on to draw money and somebody that they, you know, would put on an equal footing with somebody like John Cena. But
yeah.
I don't think it was this, you know, this massive sea change of, you know, at least, you know, maybe something that Punk would have imagined would happen in his mind when he finally got some stroke in the company. You know, I think, you know, it's just based on his reaction to, you know, his the way he left the company and the podcast that he has done and the interviews he's done subsequently. You know, I think he was hoping, you know, based on the way that fans reacted to this, that, you know, the people in the company would realize, well, okay, obviously we've been doing everything wrong and we need to fix it now. You know, and I don't think that that ever was the case from the perspective of the company. I think they saw this and the connection he made with fans as something that they could exploit to make money and not something that was an indictment of the way that they did business.
Yeah, I think obviously he expected it to be something else. And I would say more important, we can talk about what they did to follow up on that promo, obvious, and the legacy of that, because I think that is, it was part of the immediate legacy of that promo, but it's part of just what WWE would become in those few months. Like, if you remember the summer of 2011, a lot of things happened. We had the Raw Super Show occurring, which meant, essentially the end of the brand split, which went out with a whimper more than a roar. It became all the talent's going to be on Raw. We had the weird the talent walks out on Triple H, or no, the I love you pop moment with Triple H getting rid of Vince McMahon, and the talent then walking out on Triple H later. Like, all of that weird stuff happened in the wake of this, and you had the strange moments where they tried to recapture the magic of this promo, and they did it multiple times. It became known as CM Punk's pipe bomb promo, but then you had guys like Michael Cole, and Jason talked about this a lot at the time, Michael Cole going, the pipe bomb throwing CM Punk is coming out, he's got a microphone, like, kind of saying, like, you never know what's gonna happen, and to me, I know that made me recoil a little bit, because I'm like, don't have corporate Michael Cole endorse the anti-corporate force of CM Punk, like, that should be completely different, and that was one of those really interesting, fascinating, like, one of those things where you're like, okay, they get it, but they don't. And what I think of right now is, I think it was the contract signing for this particular match where CM Punk was given the opportunity to go out and say whatever he wanted to Vince McMahon, basically. And I remember at the time being excited about that segment, but as I look back on it, I'm disappointed, because I look at it as CM Punk kind of, it was very much an endorsement of CM Punk's abilities, but CM Punk never got to be as meta as he got to be in that promo again. He never got to have those moments again, and they never quite made it work the way I think we all kind of hoped they would with him again past this one shining moment.
Yeah, I think he, you know, very quickly just sort of fell back into, you know, it being very obvious that the company was aware of and, you know, and invested in promoting him as this anti-authority figure, instead of feeling, you know, like a Steve Austin did at one time, or, you know, especially like a Brian Pillman, where they, you know, they felt legitimately dangerous to the status quo, where, you know, you weren't entirely certain, you know, whether they were walking a line between work and shoot, or if this guy really was unhinged, or if, you know, he really was supposed to be punching his boss, or, you know, there are times where, you know, you're able to suspend your disbelief for a brief moment and think, well, maybe, you know, maybe this is working, you know, outside of, you know, the normal, you know, modus operandi of the company. And you never got that impression beyond those brief moments in that pipe bomb promo, because it was, like you said, very obvious. You know, once Michael Cole and Vince McMahon and other company figureheads started getting involved in the storyline, that they were just as invested in making sure that this worked as Punk was. And he wasn't legitimately fighting authority as much as he was, you know, trying to co-opt their promotional techniques to, you know, get himself over in this character. And that part of it sort of sucked you out of that moment. And they never quite recaptured the magic of what he was able to accomplish in those fleeting moments of that promo where it looked like he was actually, you know, saying something that he wasn't supposed to say.
Yeah, he never really said the things he wasn't supposed to say. And if you remember, obviously, I think the better moment than the actual Punk promo would be that Punk match in Chicago, the Punk Cena match. It's still, looking back, it's disappointing because now you know how CM Punk's career would end in WWE. But it's still this really cool thing WWE did for the fans in Chicago that night that they did for Punk himself. It's still this really amazing moment to watch as a wrestling fan. And I still get chills when I watch it and I see, you know, CM Punk's old Killswitch Engage music hits, and the roar of the crowd is as loud as that guttural scream at the beginning of the music. And you're like, whoa, this is something.
Yeah, they had tapped into it. I mean, it was clear that people were invested and they wanted to see CM Punk walk away with the championship. And they had, at least up until that point, gotten enough buy-in from the fan base to think that, you know, if Punk wins this match, he is going to walk away from the company with his championship. And I mean, obviously, you know, if you were the ultimate skeptic in this scenario, you would probably realize that, well, if he wins, that means that he's not leaving the company. But they managed to
like avert that skepticism. Yeah, really,
they
well did.
They won people over, and it wasn't long after that, you know, when Punk came back and they you know, had to pivot into that strange program he did with Kevin Nash, and you know, the that was supposed to be Triple H, I believe.
Stick the winner.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it just kind of quickly fell apart because they couldn't keep the momentum up, and it was a shame because I think they had tapped into something there with Punk and winning that championship, and then, you know, taking a bit of time off and showing up in Chicago, and then I think he went to Comic-Con and he did a bunch of other stuff that, you know, was away from WWE doing promotional work. That sort of, you know, it wasn't with WWE, but it was getting the word out that perhaps WWE was doing, you know, was doing something different, and that he was, you know, he was breaking some rules that were, you know, that weren't supposed to be broken. And so, you know, they had done that well enough, and then they just kind of completely dropped it when he got back, which was a huge bummer.
I think one of the funny things is the Punk promo kind of says, I think there are two methodologies at work here based on like what people like in modern wrestling and what we're seeing in brands like NXT that people are really into and that fans of CM Punk are very much into. You get the Punk methodology that says meta is good. Let's do things as, you know, let's pull back the curtain. Let's try and make it as real as possible. Let's, you know, show people some of the inner workings, but not all. Like, there are these things in what Punk was doing that are very, again, I'm going to say meta because I don't have a better word to describe it.
It only works in a sense of being meta when it's subversive.
Yeah.
Like, if you're pulling back the curtain just to show, you know,
to show Vince McMahon giving everyone a hug as they come through the curtain.
Gorilla. Yeah.
Yeah.
We want to see somebody, you know, fighting against the politics. We don't want to see somebody pulling back the curtain and, you know, giving Vince McMahon a big teary eyed hug. Like, well, it doesn't work on the same level.
Yeah. And what Punk was doing almost necessitated an authority figure for him to fight against. Like, what, you couldn't just put that CM Punk in that version of CM Punk in modern NXT where William Regal's like, I'm just going to make things fair here and have it work. Like, that Punk really needed a lot of the modern wrestling tropes that we have, as opposed to, I think, what people as opposed to what people are resonating with right now in NXT and other brands where it's just straight up wrestling. It is as close to a regular show as you can get it. It is, the world is consistent, the authority figures are consistent, everything works. Like, it was that kind of show, and I think that's what more people want. I don't know that that version of CM Punk does well within like an NXT environment, or kind of what I think a lot of us are optimistically hoping SmackDown will become, the like fair good wrestling show. As much as the Punk fans may say Punk wanted something like that and would fight for it, to me, I think Punk was more a product of wanting the old broken authority figure system to work and trying to jumpstart it. And I would say in that way, I don't think history is going to be super kind to this promo and to what he did. As much as it excited fans of the day, it didn't give them a vision of the future. It gave them a vision of the past.
Yeah, I think that's a valid criticism, and we'll have to see, if the NXT model makes its way to SmackDown or eventually makes its way to the main roster in some form, and they go back to what I think is, everything kind of comes back full circle, but it's an older model for how to structure a wrestling television show. We'll see CM Punk's pipe bomb promo lessen in importance in people's memories. But I think as long as we're still dealing with, the McMahons on television constantly berating people, whether it's Stephanie or Triple H or Vince himself or whomever, I think people are still going to look back to that as somebody speaking truth to power.
Yeah, I think so. I think people are going to look back at it fondly. And I think some people who would advocate for more of the wrestling style that I'm talking about, like that they would like it, there's a certain section of fans that are going to look at the CM Punk promo as like a defining moment in their fandom. And I get it. I totally get why people enjoyed it, even though I can't say looking back that I enjoy it as much. I totally get why people did, and I understand why it's an important moment for so many people in wrestling. But it's not, I guess part of what I'm saying in all of this is that it's not really my important moment. Like, it was cool. One of the things I remember most about it, I think that that Money in the Bank match, it was the week after Money in the Bank that you and I did the first episode of the .NET Countdown. So, we have an important anniversary for us coming up. But also, I think it did excite us to the point that you and I were like, hey, we want to do more. Like, we want to do this thing, and ended up doing it. So, Jason can thank us for that.
Yeah, I think, it did spark some interest, and I think it did draw enough attention to the show that maybe some lapsed fans might have tuned in for a short time to see it. But I think you have to contrast Punk's legacy with somebody like Daniel Bryan's and see what the futility of cynicism really is. Because
yes.
I see.
Oh, Punk, that's good. I want that sentence framed on my wall.
But I see, CM Punk as like the ultimate cynic, like somebody who just sees the worst in everything and looks for it and just focuses on it and isolates it. And he uses that as fuel for his motivation. And it's what drove his character. And it's what it seems to drive him in real life. He needs to be bitter in order to be at his best. And I think,
and that's why that kind of character needs something they have to fight against. Like they necessitate the creation of an equal and opposite force.
Correct. And I think you compare that to somebody like Daniel Bryan and how he's going to be remembered long term. And I think people will, as time rolls on and people are looking back at this, this time in wrestling a decade from now, and those two being guys who kind of came up at a similar time and took very different paths.
Very much contemporaries
in
a way.
Yeah. And they were both extremely successful independent wrestlers, and they both found success in their own way in WWE. And, you see somebody like Bryan who captured people through his just relentless optimism and the joy he took in his craft. And then you see CM Punk as sort of a guy who was always rebelling, even when it didn't seem obvious who he was rebelling against. And you look at, how those people are going to be viewed in a decade, I think people are going to have fonder memories of Daniel Bryan just because of the way, you know, he his outlook on life and his just genuine positivity about everything.
I'd agree. And even look at how their WWE careers ended up ending, with Punk's being him walking out a night after the worst Royal Rumble one of the worst Royal Rumbles all of us would ever watch. The next year might have beat it as far as bad Rumbles go. And then Punk's kind of farewell statement to fans was a podcast about how everything was wrong and terrible, and he was always right, and he should have been in the main event of WrestleMania. I mean, when you listen, I know a lot of people agreed with a lot of the things Punk said in there, but listen to that show. He comes off like such a whiny jerk. In that show with CM, with Colt Cabana he did, where it's just saying, like, I was always right. They wronged me. They wronged me again, and they wronged me again and again. And even some of his more valid points in it, which I think he does make valid points, are kind of drowned out by they wanted to do a rematch of the top drawing WrestleMania main event they had ever done, and it was wrong, and I should have been in it. And it's like, can I have my hands up? Call on me, Punk. No, you shouldn't have. That would have been dumb. I'll see you later. It's like that, and you contrast kind of that with the Daniel Bryan farewell of Bryan finally hitting his peak, getting this great moment. And I still haven't been able to bring myself to watch the WWE 24 special they did on Bryan's retirement speech and all of that, because I know I just haven't had the time to be a weepy mess yet. Like, I haven't had the time set aside on my schedule to sit around and cry while watching it.
Yeah, you know, it seems like Bryan, you know, just genuinely loved what he did to the point where, you know, he was a weepy mess just having to walk away from it. And I'm surprised he managed to summon the strength to go out there and give that promo, because it sounds like he was a wreck.
Before, you know, and after. I mean, that picture of him after he came, you've seen I don't know if footage is on that documentary thing or not, but the picture of him when he came through the camera, through the curtain, just down on the ground with Brie holding him. Oh, my heart. It hurts.
I couldn't imagine being, you know, in that scenario and feeling, you know, I think he felt good, you know, like he feels physically strong, and to know that, you know, you have this potential, you know, life-threatening situation going on, that, you know, if you do the thing you love the most, you know, you could possibly, you know, lose everything. And that, you know, it's just a tragic scenario for him. But, you know, you contrast that with somebody who, you know, who was negative throughout their whole career and walked away, you know, at the, you know, at one of the near the peak of their popularity, and you know, are missed by everyone, you know, who are fans of his. But, you know, it's like, you know, the positive guy, you know, ends up, you know, in a situation where, you know, if he's in the wrong, you know, physical encounter, he could suffer permanent physical disabilities. And then you have another guy who was the cynic, and you know, hates everyone and everything, and he's, you know, moving on to another career, and it's just like, man, there's no justice in the universe for Daniel Bryan. But you know, I'm excited to see him in the Cruiserweight Classic, and who knows where else he might pop up. So there's good things to be found there.
Oh yeah. Getting back to CM Punk. First, he's going to fight in UFC apparently this year. That's announced, and it's not canceled as of this recording. Who knows what could happen over the weekend, though.
He's a heavy underdog at the end of that fight with somebody who has no recognition. So it doesn't seem like the odds makers are particularly, you know, favoring him.
Punk didn't know how to pose for the picture when he got into the cage with this guy. Like, come on. It's watch some UFC, Punk. How do you think Punk's story ends? Like, do you think he has a successful UFC thing? Do you think he finds his way back to WWE at some point and they do business together? Like, how do you think the next 2 or 3 years go for CM Punk before he hangs up his fighting shoes, boots, MMA gloves, beard, whatever he'd have to hang up in this scenario?
You know, it's the whole never say never thing. I mean, I don't think he's going to have a particularly long or illustrious UFC career.
Really? Weird.
It seems like, you know, every bit of news that comes out of one of his camps or out of his training camp is that he works hard and he has the right attitude, but he's just not good enough to cut it as a professional in the UFC. And I think UFC signed him, you know, at a time where they could use his celebrity as a promotional vehicle. And yeah, it wasn't really because they wanted to promote CM Punk fights necessarily. But, you know, could he end up back in WWE? I don't know. You know, is there a possibility he could end up somewhere else, or, you know, opening a wrestling school, or just continuing on doing MMA training privately in obscurity and sitting on a pile of his own money? I mean, that's very possible too.
Have a pile of money.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's all up in the air for CM Punk. It doesn't seem like he has the itch to go back to pro wrestling. I mean, it seems like he's very, you know, happy doing what he's doing. But maybe, you know, getting his ass handed to him in his first MMA fight will be a wake-up call for him to do something else. Or, you know, maybe he'll see that pile of money shrinking and decide that he needs to go make a bit more. And that will probably end up being in pro wrestling somewhere.
Yeah, I think if he wants more money, wrestling is probably the place he has to end up to get it. Really interesting discussion on this, though. I find the CM Punk story very, very fascinating as far as how history is going to look at him. And I think you and I kind of starting to do this show, obviously, during the height of the Punk insanity. And kind of you and I kind of have, I think, very similar views of Punk afterwards and all that. I think it's been a fun discussion to have. I hope people listening have enjoyed it, and I hope everyone is having a happy and safe 4th of July. As people are listening to this, I am probably in the middle of working a 20-hour day in the, like, 95-degree heat, producing a 4th of July symphony concert with a fake Michael Jackson. Jake, what are your 4th of July plans?
Nothing that exciting, I can right? tell you that.
Fake but, Michael Jackson. We couldn't get real Michael Jackson for a number of reasons.
Yeah, I won't go to Michael Jackson jokes. I just can't do it. But I will probably barbecue something, and I will probably watch some fireworks. And other than that, I have no other plans.
Nice. Well, I hope you have a happy and safe 4th of July, and I hope everyone listening does as well. And we'll talk to some folks later this week. Thank you for listening to this ProWrestling.net podcast. For more, make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, hit us up with a rating, and tell your friends. Also, please check out the goodness of ProWrestling.net membership. Bye!